All right, hello. happy Monday afternoon, everyone. Let's see, I see Dove is away. Thank you. We're here for the seven steps to awakening. Continuing from where I left off last night, we're going to begin with quote 341. Let me grab that link and give it to you. If there's anybody listening on the radio, the way that you get to the quote, or actually it's not the quote, it's my journal entry regarding quote 341, is to go to RDA7, that is the digit 7, it is not spelled out, RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. And when you get to the website, you click on step 2 on the menu bar, and then click on the numbering sequence that will allow you to find your own way to number 341. All right, and I noticed that that there may be some connection problems with PalTalk, so we'll watch that. And I do have the admin hat on. I don't use the admin hat very often for anything but posting links in the room. So if an admin emergency comes up, we'll see if I can handle it. why don't we begin with a moment of silence? Amen. All right, so I'm just going to jump right into it. If you were here last night, you may remember that the quotes that we're reading now come from the Supreme Yoga. I am on quote number 341, and this is it. When the mind entertains notions of objects, there is agitation or movement in the mind. And when there are no objects or ideas, then there is no movement of thought in the mind. When there is movement, the world appears to be. When there is no movement, there is cessation of world appearance. So the word object here is not just referring to physical objects, but the world object in this quote is referring to thoughts. Thought themselves are an object. And, you know, we can all pay attention to at least part of this quote. We can pay attention to it in our own minds and verify that it's true. We can pay attention to the fact that when we entertain thoughts, when we pay attention to thoughts, there is, you know, he calls it an agitation. But there's an energy that encourages or additional movement of thought. So if a story starts to rise in my mind, if I give my attention to just the first few thoughts in that direction, then what happens is it encourages more of that, kind of an, you know, like an agitation. You know, I'm thinking of when I'm reading the word agitation, what it's reminding me of is a washing machine, actually. You know, the washing machine has that thing in the center that kind of moves up and down. You too, yeah. Barb says her too. Kind of moves up and down, and it agitates the clothes so that the clothes move around in the water. And so they circle around instead of just staying in one place. It's definitely not still. There's a lot of movement going on in that washing machine in order to get your clothes clean. So when he says agitation, that's what I'm thinking of. It may not feel like an emotional agitation necessarily, but there's an agitation. As soon as I give my attention to the first few thoughts of a storyline, then it agitates and it adds more and more thoughts to that story. It lathers up like soap, right? And so, you know, we don't have to just take this in faith. We can watch this in our own mind. You know, we can watch how when we give attention, a story agitates and you know, more and more storyline gets added to the story. So let me read quote 341 again, and then we'll go to the journal. When the mind entertains notions of objects, there is agitation or movement in the mind. And when there are no objects or ideas, then there is no movement of thought in the mind. When there is movement, the world appears to be. When there is no movement, there is cessation of world appearance. All right, so let's look at 341 in the journal. It has been shown there is a direct relationship between the movement of mind and the movement appearance of the world. It has been shown there is a direct relationship between interest value in thoughts and the movement of mind. Therefore, it has been shown losing interest in thoughts is the way to realize world appearance is not real. So when this says it has been shown, what this is really referring to is that at some point with clarity, I saw this directly. That's what it means by it has been shown. While sitting in contemplation of the seven steps, clarity arose in my mind to the point that I saw this at least temporarily as a fact. So I you could say I've seen it directly. So again, it's not something that I just read and believe. It has been shown. I have seen it. So one thing that I have seen is that there is a direct relationship between the movement of mind and the movement appearance of the world. And just one little, you know, one tiny example of this is that a part of how I've been shown that is that there's really two sides to how I've been shown that. One side is by taking beliefs away. As you all may have heard, you know, some of the beliefs that I used to believe in that I truly do not believe in anymore are beliefs in betrayal, beliefs in rejection. And of course, these are just, you know, they're pretty common human beliefs. And so for the average person and for me up until a point in my life, it seemed like betrayal and rejection were just facts. It was one of those things that happen in the world. But what happened for me is that, you know, through circumstances of willingness, these ideas were completely healed in me, which means they no longer exist. And since that point, when the idea of betrayal and the idea of rejection has been taken away, I do not experience that in the world. And when I say I don't experience it, it means that my mind never interprets any event as betrayal or rejection. That's just not how my mind interprets. That, you know, the ability to interpret through that filter has been removed, and so I really do not see it anymore. I may still see the same events that other people interpret as rejection or betrayal, but my mind doesn't put that interpretation on it at all. So by having some, at least some beliefs taken away, and then noticing that I no longer experience that appearance in the world, that shows that there's a direct relationship between the movement of mind, or the thoughts that are believed in mind, and the movement or appearance of the world. But there are other things that I've seen in clarity that also point this out. For example, in fact, I believe it was a quote that we just read last night, probably the last quote, number 340. One thing that I looked at with clarity was how mind doesn't really stop. There was I just took a walk with my dog just prior to coming here, and one thing that I did many, many, many times on this hour-long walk was return my attention to the heart. And the reason I did this many, many times is because the mind kept spinning off into some thoughts, some meaningless thoughts. And then I would notice that my mind had done that, and I would return it to the heart. And this happened multiple times. So the mind is very active. The mind is always moving. And if you look at the world, you'll notice the same characteristics in the world. The world is very active. The world is always moving. And you can see that there's just really no difference between the way the mind behaves and acts and the way the world behaves and acts. There's a direct relationship in the way that they are. And that clarity has also been seen. So when you take the two together, when you take, on the one hand, I've had some beliefs taken out of the mind, and as the beliefs were taken out of the mind, the appearance was also taken out of the world, right? And then I notice that the two behave the same. You know, the two constantly are spinning, constantly are moving, never stay the same, right? So it's really these two ways of seeing that it was shown for me that there is very definitely a direct relationship between the movement of mind and the movement appearance of the world. And I accept that. I accept that they are the same. They have the same characteristics. There is no difference. The second thing 341 says is it has been shown there is a direct relationship between interest, value in thoughts, and the movement of mind. Now, this is the agitation that the quote was talking about, and I have seen this as well. I have seen many, many, many times in my mind where some story tried to start, like the first thought was thrown up. And because I did not show interest in the first thought, the story died. So there were no other thoughts following. There was no agitation, nothing else coming up. The story just kind of faded out, halted, had no continuation because I did not buy into the first thought. And then, of course, there have been those stories that have captured my interest. And some stories have captured my interest literally for months at a time. And so I've seen that when a story captures my interest for months at a time, just how many thoughts can come to where the story gets really big, right? But because I've experienced both, I've experienced not giving my attention to the initial thought, and therefore there really was no story. And I've experienced giving my attention to those thoughts, seeing more thoughts come, and as I give my attention, more thoughts come, and watching the agitation just grow. I know from my own experience that it's true that there is a direct relationship between the interest or the value that I give to thoughts and the movement of mind. So I know that the only reason mind spins is because I still give it enough interest to encourage that spinning. I know that. And therefore, it's not at all surprising that I still see and experience a world, because if the spinning of the mind, if the effect of that spinning is a world, right, well, I know I still give enough attention to the mind. I know that this is still a weakness of mine. So, it has been shown there is a direct relationship between the movement of mind and the movement appearance of world. It has been shown there is a direct relationship between interest, value, and thoughts and the movement of mind. Therefore, it has been shown losing interest in thoughts is the way to realize world appearance is not real. And I accept that fully. And so I still put willingness and effort towards the practice of losing interest in thoughts. That is still important for me. All right, you can scroll down underneath the comment and reply area and click on number 342. And I will also put a link to 342 in the room. And I will start by reading 342 from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. This quote is coming from another book called The Supreme Yoga. In truth, there is no creation and hence no division at all. In truth, there is no creation and hence no division at all. All right, the journal says, that which you think of as having been created is mind illusion and not real. Having not been created, it only appears to be when mind is given interest and value. Having not been created, it ceases to appear when the hallucinating mind apparatus is no longer given power, interest, and value. So, you can see that this is really just driving home the point that was made in the previous journal entry. The previous journal entry was really saying, you know, that I have seen for myself that losing interest in thoughts is an important spiritual practice. I have seen for myself that when I give interest and value to thoughts, when I pay attention to thoughts, the thoughts become agitated and the stories grow. And I've also seen that there's a direct relationship between the mind and the world, as well as my experience of the world. So I know that the answer, I know, there's no doubt in me about this. I know that the answer is losing interest in thoughts. And so this journal entry is reemphasizing that, because even though it's known, it still needs to be reemphasized. And the reason it needs to be reemphasized is because there's still a strong attraction to thoughts. And as long as that strong attraction to thoughts remains, the reminder that thoughts are the problem, that paying attention to thoughts is the cause of all misperception, that needs to continue to be reemphasized. And as I give my willingness, every time I hear this teaching thought, as I do what I did on my walk today, continually turn my attention away from thoughts, somehow I'm helping myself in the awakening process. Because it's the reverse direction of the problem. So number 342 says, that which you think of as having been created is mind illusion and not real. Having not been created, it only appears to be. When mind is given interest and value, having not been created, it ceases to appear when the hallucinating mind apparatus is no longer given power, interest, and value. All right, we can scroll down and click on number 343. And I will read first from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, quote number 343. When the world is assumed to be real, the self is not seen. But when this assumption is discarded, consciousness is realized. Again. When the world is assumed to be real, the self is not seen. But when this assumption is discarded, consciousness is realized. All right, so the journal number 343. How do I assume the world to be real? So this is looking, right? This is looking. I mean, the quote that we just read tells us that when the world is assumed to be real, the self is not seen, right? So one thing I need to look at is, what are ways that I assume the world to be real without noticing that I'm doing that? Kind of a blind assumption. I need to bring those blind assumptions into view so that they're no longer hidden. And so I can stop that habit of blind assuming. So the question asked is, how do I assume the world to be real? Every time I react to a situation in the world, that reaction is backed by an assumption that the world is real. Now, one thing I want to be clear about is this looking is not implying guilt. It's the ego that says we're guilty for believing the world is real. It's the ego that says we're guilty for believing the ego. Clarity is able to look at error without a judgment of guilt. But it's like shining a light on something so that it can be seen clear. In fact, I'm going to jump ahead just a little bit. Today I looked at one quote in the Seven Steps to Awakening, quote number 600. Let me read to you what quote number 600 says. This is Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. Here's what Nisargadatta says. Trace every action to its selfish motive and look at the motive intently till it dissolves. Now, although lots of us associate guilt with the idea of selfish, again, there's no guilt intended here, no judgment intended. But what Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj is saying is that if we really look at the ego, it disappears if we look at it with the light of clarity. So he's suggesting trace every action, and an action could be a decision to pay attention to a thought. Trace every action to its selfish motive, selfish really meaning that it emphasizes the belief in I, and look at the motive, find it and look at it intently till it dissolves. So what's happening here in 343, again, you know, I read a quote in 343, a quote that said, when the world is assumed to be real, the self is not seen. When this assumption is discarded, consciousness is realized. And so I realize that obviously a part of my problem is that I still assume the world to be real. And then I asked, how do I do that? Where am I assuming? Where are my blind assumptions happening? And the first answer to that question was, every time I react to a situation in the world, every time, not sometimes, every time I react to a situation in the world, that reaction is backed by an assumption that the world is real. And this is being shown to me so that I can look at it. As Sri Nisargadatta recommended in quote 600, look at it until it dissolves. Every time I react to anything, to something Jasmine said, to something, some unexpected thing that happens in the house, something breaks or floods, to somebody swerving in front of me in traffic, to somebody making it clear they don't like me. Every time I react to anything, no matter what it is, that is backed by my blind assumption that the world is real. And so what I want to do is notice that. I don't want to judge my reaction. I just want to look at it with this clarity. That reaction is backed by an assumption that the world is real. And what Sri Nisargadatta told us in quote 600 is that as we look with this clarity, the ego dissolves. It's the power of looking itself. The power of looking with clarity, without judgment. So I want this awareness. This awareness that every time I react, that's a place where I'm blindly assuming the world is real. This awareness is important to me. And I don't want to forget this awareness. I want to remember this awareness. And when I react to something, I don't want to judge myself as a bad spiritual student. I just want to realize where the reaction came from and look at that. There it is, right there. I see it. Shine the light on it. This is a place where I'm blindly assuming the world is real. Just look. The interesting thing is the ego says that's not enough. The ego wants us to find something else that we have to do. But if you think about it for half a second, you'll realize that if we go off looking for something else to do, we actually abandon the looking. Ego can't stand the stare, just the holding of the looking. So ego wants to distract us to, you got to do something else, you got to do something else. Actually, we just need to hold it in our awareness, clarity awareness. Every time I react to a situation in the world, that reaction is backed by an assumption that the world is real. How else do I assume the world to be real? Every time I am engaged by thoughts regarding some world-based story, that interest is backed by an assumption that the world is real. Well, there's a place that I'm definitely still hooked. I'm a little better on the reaction thing. The truth is, I very seldom react anymore. But getting caught up in thoughts in my mind, that I still do with a lot of regularity. Regularity, is that the right word? Regularly. I do that regularly. So here's a place where I personally am still engaging in a lot of blind assumption that the world is real. Every time my mind starts listening to some world-based story in my thoughts, I'm actually giving it the assumption that the world is real. Otherwise, the story would have no interest for me. And it's funny because often the stories have nothing to do with reality. The stories are, just fantasies. But yet behind every one of those fantasies, there's this assumption that the world is real. That's why it's worth giving these fantasies attention. How else do I assume the world to be real? Well, actually, there isn't another answer. Let's start at the beginning and read down. How do I assume the world to be real? Every time I react to a situation in the world, that reaction is backed by an assumption that the world is real. Every time I am engaged by thoughts regarding some world-based story, that interest is backed by an assumption that the world is real. How can I release the assumption that the world is real and realize self, which this assumption hides? Do not trust my perceptions or my thoughts. Out of inherent distrust, which is the opposite of the assumption that the world is real, check within constantly for how I am to see, what I am to think, and what I am to do, if anything. Now this, at least, I am pretty good at, to be honest. I told you that, my mind still gets hooked by the stories. I still find myself listening to the stories. But actually, for the most part, I am pretty good at waking up to that and then totally disregarding the story. One way I know this is true is that I don't hold any grievances against anyone. And the stories that still show up in my mind would be encouraging me to hold grievances. They would tell me that I have a reason to hold a grievance against this person or a reason to hold a grievance against that person. And if I was believing the stories that show up in my mind, then I would feel those grievances. So even though right now I will still find myself getting caught up in a story for a short time, right? They're not ever long times, they're short times. I do wake up to the fact that I just went off listening to a story, and then I'm able to totally disregard the story that I just listened to. Completely let it go. And so since I completely let it go, none of its thoughts are hanging around in my mind believed, and so I don't have grievances against anyone. I also don't have any fears about the future. Right, even though occasionally a story may show up for a little bit telling me there's a reason to fear something, once I see that I listen to the story, I disregard it completely. I let it go when I wake up to the fact that I was listening to it. And as a result, there's no after effect, no aftertaste. So in that way, I'm free. What I want is to become free to the point that I never listen in the first place. In other words, you could say what I still need to engage in is forgiveness. For me, forgiveness is letting go. So I will get caught up in a thought for a time, a story for a time. I wake up. When I wake up completely. And I say, oh gosh, that was silly. And I let it go completely. So there's no residual effect. But there's still a forgiveness process that's happening. And to be honest, I would like to go beyond the forgiveness process. I would like to continue to practice losing interest in the thoughts at the front end, which sometimes I do. I mean, I don't go into every story that shows up in mind. There are a lot of stories that, that first thought shows up and I don't pay attention. But then there are other stories that show up where I do go into them. So I would like to get better at losing interest in the front end, so that the agitation never happens, the story never develops, and there's nothing to forgive or let go of. So that kind of describes where my focus is right now. I think that describes perfectly where my focus is right now. Losing interest at the front end. Always. I'm okay with having a goal of being 100% consistent. That doesn't mean I've achieved that goal yet. Some people are afraid of goals like that, like being 100% consistent. And of course, that's because they're afraid of failure. And of course, that's because they still have that belief that they're bad and that if they fail, that's proof that they're bad. But I've released the belief that I'm bad. I understand that listening to stories is a habit, and I understand it takes effort to change a habit that is as ingrained as listening to stories. But I don't see myself as bad when I am not yet able to be 100% consistent in dropping a story at the front end. I just see it as I need to keep working on this. One image that came to me many years ago that is very, very helpful is the image of a 1-year-old learning to walk. You know, a 1-year-old practices for, a few months on walking. And, at first they definitely need assistance. They're like holding on to the sofa or whatever, and they still fall. But, you never see a 1-year-old, or at least I haven't. Maybe there are some. I haven't seen a 1-year-old that gets really angry at itself for falling. They just fall, and then they try again. And then eventually they're taking a few steps away from the sofa, and they fall, but they try again. And they don't see the falling as bad. They don't see themselves as bad for falling. They just keep trying again until one day walking is completely and perfectly natural, which all of us have mastered the act of walking. Well, for me, I see this as the same. The fact that my mind still got hooked into stories multiple times on my walk with my dog does not mean that I'm bad. It does not mean that I failed. It just means that I got to keep on trying. That's the way I see it. And I have trust that losing interest in the mind can at some point be as easy and as natural as walking. Because the truth is, I've already recognized that the majority... Silly. Okay, you want to hear how stupid I am? Okay, here we go. I've already recognized that the stories that capture my attention aren't truly interesting to me. Not really. That's why I'm able to abandon them as soon as I wake up. They aren't truly interesting to me. It's kind of like, it's kind of like when you find yourself sitting there watching something on TV, just because you're too lazy to get up and move away from the TV, so you're watching something on TV that isn't even interesting to you, and you wonder, why the heck am I watching this? I don't even care about it. Well, the same thing happens in my mind. I find myself watching things that I'm not truly interested in. So since I'm already aware of the fact that I'm not truly interested in these stories, it's not a huge leap to realize that if I just keep practicing not getting pulled in, eventually I shouldn't get pulled in at all, because the truth is I'm not really interested. There isn't a true interest there. There's only habitual drinking, occurring, a habitual drinking of thoughts. So I just need to break the habit. But there's nothing there that has any value, and that I already know. I've journaled my thoughts and looked at my thoughts enough to know that there's nothing there of any real value. They're not worth listening to. They aren't my salvation. I just have a habit. So, I'm going to read 343 again. How do I assume the world to be real? Every time I react to a situation in the world, that reaction is backed by an assumption that the world is real. Every time I am engaged by thoughts regarding some world-based story, that interest is backed by an assumption that the world is real. How can I release the assumption that the world is real and realize self, which this assumption hides? Do not trust my perceptions or my thoughts. That's so important. Don't believe them. Do not trust my perceptions or my thoughts. Out of inherent distrust, which is the opposite of the assumption that the world is real, check within constantly for how I am to see, what I am to think, and what I am to do, if anything. I will tell you the current story that's hooking me to a degree. I feel to overtell this story would be a mistake, so I'm going to not overtell it. I'm only going to lightly tell it, just enough to be helpful. There's someone here in Pueblo who does appear not to like me, and it's someone that I work closely with on a few things. And although, of course, if the person chooses not to like me, that just has to be accepted, and there's nothing I can do about that. Because of the close working relationships, it seems worthwhile to at least attempt to shine a light on misperceptions and hopefully see them put aside so that there can be a trusting working relationship. A trusting working relationship seems nice. Now, I don't know for sure that this can be achieved because, you know, we can't ever convince someone else to let go of an idea they don't want to let go of. I can't prove to someone that their misperception of me is incorrect, right? So we can sit down and meet together and see what happens. That's the best we can do. And actually, I have a lunch date with this person this week for that purpose, that we both know the purpose of the meeting. So, of course, since that's coming up this week, that's one of the storylines that my mind kept going off into the walk today. And what my mind was doing was trying to, you know, say, basically it's the she'll say this and then you'll say this type of fantasy. Well, at an earlier time in my life, I would have believed that she's going to say this, and therefore I'm now prepared by having planned what I was going to say in return. I would have believed that something valuable happened in these thoughts. But now I don't believe that. In fact, now I think that the only thing these thoughts are trying to do is to put me into a defensive posture so that when I show up at this lunch meeting, I show up in a defensive posture and, you know, separation will definitely be perceived. So when I saw the stories showing up, you know, I dismissed the stories. But I did also do what this is recommending. I asked within, you know, how am I to see this? And I got a very clear answer. Just be completely open. That was my answer. It's clear as day. Just be completely open. And I not only, you know, heard that answer, but I feel it completely in my heart. Like my entire heart opens up. So really this morning I followed the advice that's given here in 343. My mind was attracted to the stories to some degree. But then I woke up to the fact that I was attracted to the stories. I released the stories. I did not hold on to any belief. I did not hold on to any plan of, okay, when she says this, I'll say this. I let it all go. And then I asked how I am to see this situation. I received the answer, be completely open. And I am continuing to say yes to that. Yes, that's how I want to be. I want to walk in completely open. And completely open means I can't have any preconceived ideas of what she's going to say, of what she's going to think, of how I need to be. I can have no preconceived ideas and be completely open. All right, Jamie wants to go outside. Hold on 1 second. So if we are willing to not believe the stories in our mind, really just dump them, we can receive also guidance on how to see or how to think about a specific situation or what to do. But if we believe the stories in our mind, then we're going to follow the advice of the stories, right? And then that's just continuing to act on the belief that the world is real. So again, number 343, how do I assume the world to be real? Every time I react to a situation in the world, that reaction is backed by an assumption that the world is real. Every time I am engaged by thoughts regarding some world-based story, that interest is backed by an assumption that the world is real. How can I release the assumption that the world is real and realize self, which this assumption hides? And here's the answer. Do not trust my perceptions or my thoughts. Out of inherent distrust, which is the opposite of the assumption that the world is real, check within constantly for how I am to see, what I am to think, and what I am to do, if anything. All right, we can scroll down and click on number 344. All right, so I'm going to read 344 from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. The seer alone is real, the object being hallucination. Again, the seer alone is real, the object being hallucination. All right, number 344 in the journal. The world is not real. The perceiving thinker is not real. Isness or beingness is real. As some people could misunderstand this quote that I just read from The Seven Steps to Awakening, which originally comes from the Supreme Yoga. When it says the seer alone is real, some people could possibly misunderstand that to mean the perceiving thinker or the interpreter. But the object of thoughts, the object of interpretation, is hallucination. So the perceiving thinker cannot really be real either, because that's all hallucination. I mean, all the perceiving thinker is, all that is, although it's hard to see this until you see it, all that is belief caught up in thought. So we think we are the perceiving thinker because belief is caught up in thought. But thought itself is object, which means the perceiving thinker is also object or hallucination. One thing that I realized just in the last few days, that sometimes I laugh at myself when I have these realizations. I'll tell you why, because when they're realized, they're so simple. I guess that's why I laugh. It's like, okay, I just realized this. In a joking moment, I want to say, I'm an idiot. And yet some of the people I'm talking to may not have realized it yet. And I'm not trying to say that you're an idiot. I'm just saying that when these realizations hit, it's kind of like, duh, that was so obvious. How come I didn't see that before? And I guess the only answer is we were just still too attached to ego. I don't know. But something that I realized just the other day, simple as pie, but until a few days ago I did not see it, is, I'm trying to figure out how to even say it. I'm going to start with the word I. I'm going to start with the word I. Almost all of the time when we use the word I, not all of the time to be honest, but almost all of the time when we use the word I, what we are referring to is the perceiving thinker. I think, I don't really believe what I'm about to say, so this is not true. I don't really think this, but I have to say something. I think that I have to work out my relationship with this woman or else it's going to be very difficult in the future. I don't actually think that. I think it's worth trying to work out the relationship with the woman, but if she doesn't want to like me, that I can just accept that and things will be fine. So I don't really believe that. But let's just for argument's sake say that I think I have to work out this relationship with this woman or it's going to be difficult. Something's going to be very difficult. In that sentence, when I say I think, I am believing I am the perceiving thinker. I am believing I am the thoughts, the interpretation. There's a thought, there's an interpretation that is present that says relationship must be worked out or it's going to be difficult. A belief is attached to that thought, and then I say, I think, right? And I'm totally identified with the thought. There's no separation between what I am and the thought. So I believe I am the perceiving thinker. Whenever mind says I, that's what it's identified with. Mind, for mind, I always means the perceiving thinker. And yet, through my seeing, through my work with the Seven Steps to Awakening and Inner Ramana and NTI and everything else, through my seeing, I have seen there is what I'm going to call a real I that is not the perceiving thinker. It's before the perceiving thinker. This I has nothing to do with thought. It is always present, completely consistent, and non-changing. Now here's what I just realized the other day. All of that was just build up. What I just realized the other day is mind never calls that I. Mind is limited to itself. Now there is a seeing, which this quote we just read calls it the seer. It says, the seer alone is real. There is a seeing that is aware of this. There is a seeing that can see the perceiving thinker and knows it's not that. And it knows itself. That's what's real. That's the real I. But mind never, never, when mind is yapping away and saying I this and I that and I this, it is never once projecting that I onto that which is before itself. That's what I realized, and that's what they call the I thought. That's what I call the I thought. I use the language I thought before I had the clarity of seeing that. And I don't even know if I'm explaining it well. So there is an I, or there is a self, that is prior to mind, and it can see mind, but mind never thinks of it. So when mind says I, mind is always coming from the perceiving thinker, which is still illusion. Now, the word that I most commonly put on that which is before the mind is isness. That's my most common word. It's not my only word, but it's my most common word. It's isness. Some people call it presence. Some people call it beingness. Some people call it awareness. Some people call it here-ness. And I've used all of those words at one time or another, but my most common word is isness. It's that which just is present, just is. And that's what this quote is calling the seer. It's not referring to the perceiving thinker, it's referring to that which is before, that which can see the perceiving thinker and know that it's not real. The seer. So whenever we are thinking, and we do this just commonly, right? I think I need to work out this relationship with her or it's going to be difficult, right? Those are common types of ways that we think. The I in that sentence, the I in that thought is not real. That is just thought. And without the belief in the thought, that I doesn't even exist. It has no reality whatsoever. It's an absolute phantom. The world is not real. The perceiving thinker is not real. Isness or beingness is real. That's number 344. So we can scroll down and click on number 345. I'm just going to take a drink of water. I see Dove's back. Welcome back. I'm going to read 345 from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. When self-knowledge, and this is capital S, self, when self-knowledge arises and the object ceases to be, the seer is realized as the sole reality. So we've gone through some terminology lessons today. So now you know that object is thought, right? And you know that the seer is isness, not the perceiving thinker. In fact, the perceiving thinker would fall into object since it's just thought, right? So when self-knowledge arises and the object ceases to be, the seer is realized as the sole reality. Now it's funny because all of us at some point experience the fear of losing the ego. And, that doesn't really feel like a fear of losing the ego, to be honest. It feels like the fear of myself dying. But the funny thing is, that self that we are identified with when we feel that fear of myself dying is not what we are. I mean, think about it for just a moment. Use the example of, of me being identified with the perceiving thought. I think that this relationship needs to be worked out or it's going to be difficult. Now, if you can just imagine for a moment, if you can put yourself fully in that thought with me, just really pretend like this is a relationship in your life. It could be a spouse, it could be a child, it could be somebody you work with, somebody you have a job interview with. Imagine there's a lot of difficulty in this close relationship, and just imagine for a moment with me that you really have this thought, I think this relationship needs to be worked out or it's going to be difficult. If you can imagine with me for a moment, you can feel that identity. You can feel that when you say, I think, that I feels like you. But if you look at it, we just imagined this. I just asked you to join me in an imagining exercise. So any identity you may have felt, if you did some good imagining there, was also a part of the imagination. It was literally an imagined identity. Imagining that you felt that way was imagined. So if it's imagined, then can it be what you are? And the answer is no. You see, that's what we blindly do all the time. We have these perceiving thoughts that we identify with, we believe and identify with, and because we believe and identify with them, we literally think they're who we are. And so we think that in letting go of thought, we are letting go of ourself, and that gets scary. But it never was who we are. It was only imagination. And really, if you let go of imagination, have you let go of anything real? Have you let go of anything at all? The answer is no. So again, this quote says, when self-knowledge arises and the object ceases to be, that doesn't mean that we cease to be. It just means imagining stops. When self-knowledge arises and the object ceases to be, the seer is realized as the sole reality. Then we just see who we are. There's no loss. There's literally nothing to fear. All right, let's look at 345 in the journal. says, the world is distraction from that which is real. The perceiving thinker is distraction from that which is real. When self-realization occurs, distractions lose their attraction value because in the light of reality, they are seen to be unreal. While they are still assumed to be real, their attraction value is very strong. Minimize the attraction value of distractions by choosing to remember what is real. Use whatever remembrance you have. It is enough to be helpful. So what this is saying is that we do need to put some effort into realizing in an honest and true way, not just saying, you know, oh, I believe this. There's another level of realizing that has nothing to do with belief. We need to put some effort into realizing that we are not the perceiving thinker, and we need to put some effort into noticing, paying attention to what we are. And what this says is use whatever remembrance you have. I mean, so far, and I can only talk about my experience so far, I can't tell you what my experience is going to be, but so far in my experience, there have been what I'm going to call different levels of really realizing the difference between what is true and what is not true. You know, like the first level that I could tell you about is I began to realize that some thoughts were not true. You know, which when I was in that phase of realizing, that's when I was able to let go of some thoughts, like the thought of rejection, the thought of betrayal. When I was in the phase of realizing that some thoughts were not true, I still completely saw myself as the perceiving thinker. I was just letting go of parts of that. And so at that point for me, the best remembrance I had of what I am was something like, I don't have to believe all of my thoughts. And I could hold on to that remembrance. And I did hold on to that remembrance. And I began to notice thoughts that were causing suffering that didn't have to be believed. And I began to ask for healing from those thoughts, and those thoughts became healed. So my best remembrance at that time was, the closest I came to remembering who or what I am, was simply, I don't have to believe all of my thoughts. But there was still a complete belief that I was the perceiving thinker, and at that time I was incapable of remembering earlier than that. Remembering before perceiving thinker. But then later, through the practice of the mantra, I am that I am, through the teachings of Inner Ramana, through self-inquiry, I opened up to something that was before the perceiving thinker, and I realized that that's what I am. Actually, I think there was another phase that came first. I began to see myself more as the right mind. I am the right mind, I am not the wrong mind. And then after that, I opened up to what was before the mind completely. So my point is, it doesn't matter where you may be. It doesn't matter if you still think, okay, I don't have to believe all of my thoughts. Or if you start thinking, okay, I am the right mind. That's who I am, and I'm only going to believe my thoughts. I'm not going to believe thoughts that aren't mine. Or if you start to see, wait a minute, I'm before thought entirely. Or if there's something else that I haven't realized that you see. It doesn't matter where you are on that continuum. Staying with your highest remembrance, staying there is what's most helpful for you. Being there as much as possible. So if your highest, honest awareness right now is, I don't have to believe all of my thoughts, then stay with that as much as possible. Just remember, I don't have to believe all my thoughts. Stay there. And if somebody happens out of arrogance to say to you, you know, you aren't even the perceiving thinker and there's nothing in you that can even begin to understand that, just forget about it for now. Say, well, I don't know about that. I can't understand that. That makes my mind hurt. But I do know I don't have to believe all of my thoughts. Stay with that. I'm reminded right now of Peace Pilgrim, who said, as she lived up to the highest light she had, higher light was given. And that's my experience as well. If you stay with your honest, highest perception, then higher perceptions open up naturally. So your job is really to know intuitively within yourself, what is your current highest perception? What is your current highest remembrance of truth? And then spend as much time as possible in that instead of falling back down into lower perceptions and lower beliefs. So 345 says, the world is a distraction from that which is real. This is just a fact. That's what the world is. It's a distraction from that which is real. The perceiving thinker is also a distraction from that which is real. When I believe I'm the perceiving thinker, I do not recognize what I am. When self-realization occurs, these distractions of the world, the perceiving thinker, they totally lose their attraction value. Because in the light of reality, they are seen to be unreal. That's known. That's clear. That's obvious. So they have no more attraction value. However, while they are still assumed to be real, their attraction value is strong. There's no sense in denying that. So, if their attraction value is still strong for us, the world and or the perceiving thinker, then we have work to do. What is our work? We want to minimize the attraction value by choosing to remember what is real, or we could say what is true. And then I love this. Use whatever remembrance you have. Whatever you have, whatever your honest, highest perception, your honest, highest remembrance is, that is good enough. It is enough to be helpful, this says. So we don't have to stretch to have clarity on something we're just not ready to have clarity on. It's not like whatever clarity we have now is too bad, is too low, not good enough, you know, below the bar. That's never true. Whatever clarity you have is always good enough. Use it. Use whatever you have, and it will pull you higher. Isn't that good news? Isn't that great news? All right. So let's scroll down and click on number 346. I will start by reading 346 from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. It is the mind that makes things appear here. It brings about the appearance of the body, etc. Not else is aware of the body. The mind is aware of the body, right? It is the mind that makes things appear here. It brings about the appearance of the body, etc. Not else is aware of the body. All right, let's look at the journal entry for number 346. The body and the world appear real, but that is because mind makes it seem so. Minimize the belief in mind-made illusion by choosing to remember what is real and what is not. So again, this thought is just emphasizing the teaching of the previous thought. And again, you can practice this with whatever your highest level of remembrance is. So, you know, the example I've been using, if your highest level of remembrance is, I don't have to believe all of my thoughts, then choose to continue to remember that. And choose to look at your thoughts and ask, do I have to believe this one? What do I get out of believing this one? Does this thought serve me? Does this thought make me feel good, or does this thought make me feel bad? Start sorting through your thoughts, you know, like you're separating trash from treasures. When you come across a thought that's a treasure, like you are innocent, you are love, keep those thoughts. They're helpful to you. And when you come across a thought like you're ugly, you're mean, you're nasty, throw away those thoughts. They're trash. That's separating what points towards truth from that which is totally false. So go ahead, do that. That's what's good for you. But if you're at a level where somehow you're starting to see that what you really are is beyond thought completely, and that you don't need to pay attention to any thoughts, this is kind of in alignment with NTI's 1 Corinthians, the empty shell. You don't even want to pay attention anymore to thoughts like you are innocent, because even somehow you see in that, that may have pointed you in the direction of truth, but now it's really still holding on to the idea that you're a person or something. And you see that even that thought is just no longer helpful. It was a great bridge thought for a while. It took you a ways, but now it's better to pay attention to the thoughtless self. You turn your attention away from all thoughts. And if somehow you have that intuitive knowing of how to do that, well, then do that. turn your attention away from all thoughts now. And stay in the thoughtless as much as possible. So the body and the world appear real. But that is because the mind makes it seem so. This is just review. That's the problem statement. The body and the world appear real. But that is because mind makes it seem so. And now the solution statement. Minimize the belief in mind-made illusion by choosing to remember what is real and what is not. That's your activity. That's your assignment. That's what you can do. Okay, Jamie wants in. I'll be right back. So why don't we go on to 347? I'm getting hungry. So I'm kind of happy to see I'll be done in 12 minutes and I can go eat. All right, 347 in the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. The infinite consciousness alone is. And in the book, both the I and the S in is are capital. Yeah, so emphasis here. Oh, Barb's teasing me by putting pictures of cheeseburgers in the room. I am hungry because even that little cartoon hamburger there with the tomato and lettuce on it looks really good. That shows I'm hungry. Okay, let me read number 347 again. The infinite consciousness alone is. All right, let's look at 347 in the journal. What is real? Okay, so the previous journal entry said pay attention to just what is real, right? Now, what is real? If the world is not real, the body is not real, and the perceiving thinker is not real, what is reality? What am I? If I exist, and exist I must, but the world is not real, the body is not real, and the perceiving thinker is not real, what is true self? True self must be isness. But what is isness? If form isn't isness beingness, and the perceiving thinker isn't isness beingness, what is? What is real? What am I? What is? Now this is nothing but questions, so obviously this is self-inquiry. But this particular self-inquiry reminds me a bit of what they call neti neti. You know, neti neti is the practice of saying, I'm not that, I'm not that, I'm not that. And when you've discounted everything that you are not, then what's left is what you are. And even though this is only questioning, there is some neti neti in here because it's saying, it's accepting that, it's accepting that the world is not real. Neti neti. I'm not the world. The world is not real. The body is not real. Neti neti. And even more close to home, the perceiving thinker is not real, neti neti. So if I take away the world, if I take away the body, if I take away this perceiving thinker, what's left? That's neti neti. Here in the form of self-inquiry, what's left? And I actually just feel like leaving it at that. So why don't we go on to 348? So 348 in the Seven Steps to Awakening. Some arrive at this understanding soon. Others, after a very long time. That's the quote. Some arrive at this understanding soon. Others, after a very long time. All right, let's look at the journal. Number 348. Can isness not be present? Now for me, I'll just tell you right now that even in asking this question, there's something that blows up in the mind, and it's worth talking about. The mind cannot see isness. There is something that the mind can see. In other words, it's after mind. It's not before mind. There is something that the mind can see that is after mind. And since the mind can't see isness, it wants to call that isness. And that is what I'm going to call... Let me see how to explain this. It's a consciousness... But it's a consciousness that comes and goes. It's the consciousness that appears to wake up in the morning, and when you fall asleep or when you're knocked out, right, you're said to be unconscious. It's not there. That consciousness, ego wants to call isness because it's the best thing it has. But the problem is that consciousness does not pass the test of reality. Because it comes and goes. There is actually another consciousness. One that comes before the mind, so the mind can't see it. And this consciousness is constant. It doesn't change as you wake up in the morning and fall asleep at night. And the best way to turn your attention to that is to realize that somewhere within yourself, and it's not in the mind because it's before the mind, but somewhere within yourself, you know that even while you were asleep, you existed. And you don't just know that from waking up. It's not because you woke up again. You actually, there's something in you that knows that you were fine while you were asleep. And again, it's not a thought. It's not coming from the mind. But, you know, it's apparent because, you know, you may have been, you know, completely in a deep sleep all night. You don't have any recollection of any dreams or anything, and you'll get up and you'll say, I slept well. There's something in you that knows that you were present and that you were really fine. You were well. There was nothing wrong. Everything was perfect. Because, of course, when your human consciousness isn't present, there are no problems, there are no worries. So one of the mistakes that we make, you know, because again, we still believe that we're the perceiving thinker, is that, you know, when people start talking about awareness and consciousness, we think it's that which comes after the mind, that which the mind sees. Actually, the awareness or the consciousness that is our reality, that is ourself, is before the mind. So, if you look back at this first question, can isness not be present? When I read that question, what blows up is the idea that isness is human consciousness. Because their human consciousness can not be present. It's not present every night while I'm sleeping. So can isness not be present? If isness must be present, and it must be, can there ever be loss? If I experience confusion regarding what I am, can that be loss if isness is currently present? So what that means is I could right now feel like the most unworthiest scum on earth. We've all been there, I think. I could right now like, I'll be dying in some kind of guilt or thought of stupidity about what I said or what I did. And, you know, if I'm fully consumed in that, then I'm suffering. However, in spite of the fact that I'm suffering, there isn't an actual loss. Because the isness, the beingness, the perfectness is still present. It's not lost in that. I'm not paying attention to it. I'm not aware of it. I'm totally focused on this illusory idea that I'm the most unworthy scum in the world. But nothing is ever lost. It's more like it's added to. It's added to with the thought of unworthiness. But it's not lost. So if isness must be present, can there ever be loss? If I experience confusion regarding what I am, can that be loss if isness is currently present? The perception of not knowing self may appear to be a loss, but this is not a fact. It is perception only, and it does not merit undue concern. Okay, so if I do not know who I am, and it feels like everybody on Facebook is saying they do know who they are, you know, the ego in my mind is going to want to tell me again what a loser I am because I'm the only one on Facebook that doesn't know who I am. This is saying that actually does not merit any undue concern, the fact that you don't seem to know who you are yet. That's not even anything to be concerned about because the truth is it's present now anyway. The part of the mind that wants to be concerned about this, that's the ego. So don't listen to that concern. Just realize you can be completely ignorant about who you are, and yet that's still who you are. So you don't need to be worried about that. You can even feel comforted about that. You may still have some practice. In fact, the next line says, let practice continue. But without debasing one's current fact of isness. So you may still have some practice to do, but you can do that practice with faith and trust that at some point you will uncover what you are, because what you are is there now. So what this quote wants you to do, what 348 wants you to do, it says, the original quote said, some arrive at this understanding soon, others after a very long time. What this wants you to remember is that you will arrive. Don't judge yourself as less than. It's true now. It's true now. It's true now, no matter what your perception is. So just continue the practice knowing it's true now. You're not becoming anything, right? You're only removing what's been added. It's already true. It's always been true. You are perfect as you really are. And that's it. I'm done. I will see you guys on Friday. I'm going to go eat. Bye.